Because of the period that he covers.
Because of the amount of subject matter.
Anyway, he says there, he says the highest form of morality existed, the highest standards of morality existed where polygamy was permitted. For the very reason. And you don't have to be a big kochum for it.
How is it the Jewish people
stopping it?
Necessarily accepted that by Christian's creed. It was one rabbi who said this is the way it should be. So what made that the law?
What made that the law, that is a subject also that is discussed by Rabbi Yaakov Emden. Evidently there were several factors. Some of the factors felt that it would be more for the covert of the woman if there was only one wife, and we are very particular about the covert of a girl. That was the one thing. And a second thing is you've got to have a legal reason. And in the legal, we've got a principle. You'll notice I'm avoiding using the word concept. We've got a principle, and the principle is known as me eco midi. Me eco midi means, is there then such a thing? And it is only the beginning of a phrase. And the whole phrase is, it's a Gomorrian Sanhedrin. Me eco midi, is there such a thing that the goyim have got it? They have got a certain law. And we are the Mamleches Kohenim and the Am Kodesh. We are the holy people and we are the kingdom of priests and we haven't got it. The Goyim already had a law of only one wife in the time of Rabbeinu Gershon. And we Jews, who are much on a much higher moral standard, we haven't got that law. And so he instituted. That was his legal reasoning for instituting.
How doesn't that... Isn't that going to conflict with the principle that we are supposed to be
different
from the Goyim?
Well, we're supposed to be of a higher standard. That way we're supposed to be different. And even with our monogamy, we're still different.
But the one wife isn't a... The one wife in itself is not a standard necessary for us.
That is what the Yaakov Emden says, Rabbeinu Gershom, and they disagreed with that. Lecky also says so, Rabbeinu Gershom disagreed with it. He said it doesn't work that way. He felt that it didn't work that way, and it was accepted. And in amongst Jewish people, until, let us say, 50 years ago, the standard of morality, or 70 years ago, was very, very high. Very, very high. No other people could compare with it. It was a very high standard of morality. Really. And in Torah circles, it's still a very high standard of morality. In spite of the Rabbi Gershom.
In spite of Rabbi Gershom, presumably did not have the idea that he wanted to put down Jewish morality. But the thing is, wasn't there not also a certain external pressure? And if we look at American history of the last 100 years, there was great persecution of the Mormons because of polygamy. Weren't the fact that the Jews were practicing polygamy in a monogamous Christian Europe.
Yes, it might have been, although I don't think so, because in those days it was purely a religious matter. It was purely, I don't think so, but it could have been. There could have been indirect pressure.
Where was Gershom? Was he in the...
In France.
Oh, so he was not...
In Mainz. I think he was in Mainz. You know, it was a part of France that sometimes is Germany and sometimes is France. And you never know what it is there. In fact, before the war, if one went to Strasbourg, you got off the railway station, the first person you asked, you always said, look here, is it France or is it Germany now? Because you never knew where it was. It's clearly today it's France. Right?
We know that the Jews of Yemen, for example, incidentally, there was a case fairly recently that a rabbinical court in Haifa ruled that there was a Orthodox couple that had been married for 10 years and there were no children.
Yes.
And they did not want to separate, and they allowed him to take a second wife in order that the first marriage
should be able to continue.
To continue.
That can happen.
That, is that a general psak that
it's a big chiddush.
Oh, what?
No, it's not a general psak. If it would have been with the Sfardi, I could have understood it.
Was it a Rabbi Ohana? No.
If it could have been a psak for a Sfardi couple, then I could understand it much more easily.
But it wasn't. I think it was.
I think it was for a Sfardi couple, then it's easier.
You mean the Reb Gershom prohibition only for
Ashkenazim, not for Sfardim. And it was only the sort of
it was for 1,000 years.
All right, but
so I think it's expired.
But it's carried on. It's carried on. Yeah. Right. All right.
Yes. Expired in 1958.
The Rebbe was over 1,000 years. The Rebbe was exactly when he died.
Everybody was looking for a second wife. There was a
someone back in the pitch.
I think he died in 1060. It might have been 1040.
So
it might have been 1040. But certainly not later than 1060. He might have died in 1040. Rabbeinu Gershom.
That there was a thing, remember, 20 years ago when I was a student, that there was some special legislation passed in Israel about bigamy,
yes,
because of the talk of the expiration of Rabbeinu Gershom. It was sort of a student joke that everybody now has before the Knesset can pay. There's time to take a second wife.
Right. Now, gentlemen, if you will assist me, we can carry on further.
I'm sorry, I don't know if I ever got my original question answered.
Which was that?
Which was not whether or not it was permissible for a Jewish man to take a pelegish, but whether it was permissible for a Jewish woman to be a pelegish.
Same thing. If it's not permissible for a Jewish man to take, it's not permissible for her to be.
No, I was under the impression that a pelegish would be a non-Jewish woman.
Oh, no. That he can't do.
Okay, I see.
You cannot take
Oh, no. That's out of the question. Boel Aramis. To have an association with a non-Jewish woman. Oh, this is a very serious matter.
I was always under the impression that's what a pilagish was.
Not at all. Even Shlomo Amela's pilagish, his wives all became Jewish. Yes?
What protection do those women have?
Do
they also have some kind of...
Pilagish, yes. I think it is according to the Rambam Paskins that a pilagish has got to have a kesila.
So what's the difference in a pilagish and a wife?
Oh, well, she's got the other obligations that he hasn't got towards her. He hasn't, for example, when he goes out, with his wife. He hasn't got to take her with everywhere.
Children. Okay, so now the question is, if women are, pardon me for distraction, if women are in higher demand, and it's a Jewish woman and we're concerned about her honor, why do we let her become a pelegish? And two, why does she have to consent to be a pelegish and not a wife if women are in high demand?
Well, that is unfortunately, that's what happens. Some women are prepared to do it. And women of a higher status will say, certainly not. Do you want to be pelegish? There are places where you can get it. You've got the wrong address.
Main Street.
You want to buy it, it's a different thing. You know the one. Some women will say, he wants to marry you. How many wives have you got? He said, only one. Well, you want the second one. You've come to the wrong address. Is it her right? She can choose.
But she couldn't.
But there are some women who say, well, Tav the mate of Tam do will a mate of Arvabu. Rather any husband than remain alone.
Could she say?
So she said, all right, beggars can't be choosers. I wouldn't like to be a pilegish, but beggars can't be choosers. What can I do? I'd rather be a pilegish than have nobody.
Does she have the right to have a ketubah that he couldn't take any more wives?
The Karaites used to do that sort of thing, but that can be a condition of a ketubah. That could be a condition of the ketubah that she consents on the condition that could very easily be a condition of a ketubah. That she consents only on that.
can that be a condition of a ketubah today, that I marry you on condition that if the decree of Rabbeinu Gershom ever expires, I can take more wives?
Sorry, sir.
You're really funny.
Today you can't do that. That is gone. Because we have... the Rabbeinu Gershom's edict was made in such a way that if we were greater in Torah today than he was, he made provision that then we can decide how to do it. But if we are not, and there's no doubt that we are not, then it remains. Al-Pidin, it remains. Can't do anything about it. And we are very happy that it remains. And he made other chromium also. That's not the only one he made.
Right.
He made that you can't read anybody else's letter, even if it's lying open on the desk. You can't go and read it. If you do, you fall under a cherem. He made a cherem that a woman can't be divorced against her will. It was another one that he made.
A woman cannot be divorced
against her will. Against her will. There's another one that he made. I've forgotten the other one. The fourth one that he made. Just can't think of it for the moment. All right.
So
you've got enough to go on with for the time being.
So there has to be mutual consent.
Oh, yes, it's got to be mutual consent. It's got to be mutual consent. If it's mutual consent, then it's passing. Now, gentlemen, let us go further, and here we come, very soon we come to an answer again. Rav Zavid, surely the me will be the Kila B'Shabbos. Rav Zavid permitted for the first beer to take place on Shabbos. Now, it's a strong statement, you see. Rav Zavid, he's a strong statement. And it's a strong statement because he's one of the later ones already. There are those who say that Rav Zavid, he himself made the first beer on Shabbos. Right? Till there. And now we begin a new sugya. Now we begin a new sugya. And this is, but you can quite correctly say with every justification that we haven't finished the previous sugya. We still don't know. We haven't reached finality. Is it permitted to make the first beer on Shabbos or is it not? And this is sugya b'soch sugya. This is a sugya to help us reach a decision that it's within another sugya, which is very, very nice. Only in Gemara and things like that. It makes it very, very exciting. Yes, Bob.
Is it not as strong to say Rav Zavid Shari Lemivu B'Techidah B'Shabbos as opposed to saying Rav Zavid Omer, Rav Zavid said that it's
no.
Mutter to...
Shari is very strong because it means he gave a decision.
He gave a decision
in a concrete case.
In a concrete case.
But then that case might have been a special case.
No, then it wouldn't have put it like that.
Oh.
Then it wouldn't have put it. Yes, what's that?
How do we know that this is the next Sugya?
You got a sense.
You know, but we know it.
But please, don't make it as exclusive as all that, because it is... You can also know. Are you remaining there? The
pull it up.
Haven't you got a Gemara that you can follow?
Come
on. That's right. Now we come on to some very interesting things. And have you got it marked? You follow.
Yes.
And if it says Rav Zavid Gufei Bor Bidekila
B'Shabbos,
that's very strong indeed.
Does that indeed that he dealt with two separate cases, one his own and the other involving another person,
maybe,
or just gave the decision with respect to himself?
Maybe both. But it says, Ikud Amni, there are others who say all they add. Rav Zavid Gufei Bor Bidekila Shabbos, he gave a decision, and he himself made the first to be on Shabbos. This is a, you know, in Psach we've got things like that. The question arises, there are certain times when a wedding can't take place. The question arises, can the wedding take place on between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur? Between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. And I had a case like that when I first started my work. It was in my first year. It was my first position, and I'd only had it for a few months. And they phoned me through from the Shulda Secretary for the Candy Book of Wedding for between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. And I said, yes, it can be between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. And there was a very outstanding rabbi in those days in Johannesburg. Very outstanding rabbi. He was a brother-in-law of Reb Chaim Ozer Kuczynski. And he phoned me and he asked me whether I would come down and see him, and I said, certainly. And he said, I understand that you permitted to have that wedding on Shabbos. I said, that's good. Oh, between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. I said, yes, I did. And he said, it's not right. I said, it's not right. I said, first of all, in Shulchan Aruch, nothing is mentioned. Secondly, there is a Melamed Lehoyo, and the Melamed Lehoyo is written in Shabbos and Shivas by the David Hoffman, and he says he's asked that Shaila, and he said, not only, he said, he himself got married between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. Same sort of thing as this. Said, can you make the first beer on Shabbos? He said, he himself made it on Shabbos. You can't. So I myself did it on Shabbos, the first beer. So not only that, right, he says, but I myself, they made it on Shabbos. And then he goes on, he says, it's exclusive. It's a mitzvah to get married, and you get married between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, you come before the Rebbeinu Shleilam and Yom Kippur, and you. I said, that's what I based it on. I knew that this Rav knew the Melamed Mahavir, there's no question of he knew it. And I knew that if he said that I shouldn't have done it, he had a very good reason. He said, absolutely everything you say is right. He said, but look at the circumstances. Do you know these people at all? I said, no, I can't say that I know them. And if I do know them, I know them only very casually. He said, well, you think they'll go on honeymoon? They'll go on honeymoon. They'll be away from young people. They'll be away. Who knows what they'll do on Rosh Hashanah, on the second day of Rosh Hashanah, getting ready for the wedding. I said, you know, you are absolutely right. I promise you it will never happen again. Not only won't it happen for between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, I said, it won't even happen on Saturday night. I said, may I use your phone? Certainly. And I phoned through to my secretary. I said, no more weddings on Saturday nights. Those that have been booked, stay. No more. And finished.
So this is possible people Shabbat before the wedding?
Of course. What must go on? Absolutely. Reb David Hoffman. Oh. A person like that. You can be quite sure he didn't go on the honeymoon. And you can be quite sure Yom Kippur was in his own shul. Of course, it was a very great thing for him. But for us ordinary people like you and me, we don't risk those things. That is a luxury one allows oneself only in a highly civilized society. In our primitive societies, can do that sort of thing. So one has to be very, very careful. Right. He was an old Rav, but a very, very great doctor. Right. Now let us go on. Rav Yehuda also shor on a mivel b'techila b'yom tov. Rav Yehuda said, you can make the first beer on Yom Tov. Now, here we are. This can mean one of two things. Either it can mean you can make the first beer on Yom Tov, and on Shabbos you can also make the first beer, but he happened to be speaking about Yom Tov. Or it can be Yom Tov yes, but Shabbos not. He doesn't know what he means. That is going to be the problem. So we've got Omar Rav Yehuda Shor Lemivo Bitechila Yom Tov. Said Rav Yehuda, it's permitted to do the first Biyah. Rav Yehuda permitted to do the first Biyah Yom Tov. Omar Rav Papi Mishmei de Rovo. Immediately said Rav Papi in the name of Rovo, Lo Tamer Beyontev de Shori or the Shabbos Osu. Don't make an inference and say, since he says on Yom Tov it is permitted, but therefore the inference is that on Shabbos it's not permitted. The Hu Adin Dafila be Shabbos Nami. Because the same law applies for Shabbos also, surely it is permitted. Why does he say it's permitted on Yom Tov? Then let him rather say it's permitted on Shabbos, and I would know that it is permitted on Yom Tov. He says, Umaseh Sheoyo Kachoyo. The case was like that. It was a case on Yom Tov, so that's why he said it. But says Rav Papi in the name of Robo, the same would apply for Shabbos. It's also permitted for Shabbos. Rav Popo Mishmei de Robo, however, Omar said. Rav Popo said in the name of Robo, but Yom Tov Shori. The Shabbos also. He said, on Yom Tov it is permitted, and on Shabbos it is not permitted. So here we have a conflict. The question is, what is the position, why should it be permitted on Yom Tov and not permitted on Shabbos? That is really the burden of the sugya. You follow?
We're going to be driving at the differences, possible differences that we know exist between Yom Tov and Shabbos, right?
That's what we're coming to. That's what we're coming to. So we've got a hechatim, so we've got a possibility that on Shabbos, on Yom Tov it is permitted, but on Shabbos it is also. So obviously we've got to discuss what is the difference between Yom Tov and Shabbos. And this is a subject that I'm being asked continuously, and I was hoping that we would reach this sugya before Sukkot, but it was not to be. So let us go on from there, gentlemen. Now,
finish it before Pesach.
Omar le Rav Papi le Rav Popo, said Rav Papi to Rav Popo. Now Rav Popo is the one who says in the name of Robo, that it is permitted on Yom Tov, that Rabbi Yehuda said it was permitted on Yom Tov, but it's also on Shabbos. So said Rav Papi to Rav Popo, my daitech, let me just try and understand, what is your reasoning? My daitech literally means, what is your mind? But it means, what is your reasoning? Mitoch shehutroch abura letzorach, hutron nami shelo letzorach. Because a chaburo is permitted letzorech, since it is permitted to make a wound letzorech out of necessity, I don't understand what it means. So if I don't understand, what do I do? And what does Rashi tell me? Letzorech ocher nefesh. I'm permitted to make a wound if it is in connection with food. What kind of a wound can I make in connection with food? Gagon Shkita, says Rashi. For example, Shkita. So on Yom Tov, I'm allowed to make a wound. In other words, I'm allowed to do Shkita on Yom Tov. I can take an animal on Yom Tov, and I haven't got meat for Yom Tov, and I can take my knife, as I can shech the animal early in the morning before I go to shoot, and I can take the meat that I need, and I can bring it to my wife, and I'll say, here's the meat for your trip. You can cook dinner now, you can cook lunch, and I go off to shoot. My wife cooks lunch. That's permitted to do on your trip. Why? Because of Ocher Nefesh. From where do we know this? We know this from a passage in the Torah. The positive in the Torah is as follows.
I think it's in the Gemara later on.
Is it in the Gemara?
Later on.
Yes, but I just want to put it onto the board for you so that you'll be able to see it. Is it a Yud Beis?
Yes, not Yud Beis. Ach Asher Yachol Lechol Nefesh.
Lechol Nefesh.
Yes. Here it is. Uvayom Rishon Mikro Kodesh, Uvayom Ashvi Mikro Kodesh. So the Torah is speaking about Pesach. The first day is Mikro Kodesh, you can't do any work. Uvayom Ashvi in the seventh day is Mikro Kodesh. You can't do any work. Kol Melocha Lodei Oseh Bohem. Now, if you just look at words out there like this. Kol Melocha Lodei Oseh Bohem. Bohem. Ach, now Ach is accepting Ach, Asher Yei Ochel, Asher Yei Ochel, Asher Yei Ochel, Asher Yei Ochel, Lechol Nefesh, Lechol Nefesh, Hu Le Bardel. Who? Levado. Yei Ose Lochem. Yei Ose, yards again, it's Yei Ose Lochem. No manner of work shall be done for him on them, that is on the first day and on the seventh day. Ach, excepting Asher Yei Ose Lochol Nefesh, that which is, can be eaten by human beings, all human beings, that alone shall be done for yourselves.
Rabbi, is there any significance the fact that it's, that all the verbs are in the passive mood?
Yes, of course.
And that it's not saying you shall do, but it's saying it shall be done.
Yes,
that means you can have your slaves do it or
that
something?
That is why I pointed it, that you shouldn't make a mistake there and say, you shall instead of being okay. Mm-hmm. But that all manner of work shall not be done on them, but that which is eaten by all human beings, that itself may be done for you.
Mm-hmm.
Now, so what may be done? Let us just take the things that may be done. Shechita may be done. Bishul may be done. Bishul is cooking.
What about Hafsara? I mean, just
he's not anywhere near that.
Oh, okay.
Bishul, Shechita may be done. Bishul may be done. Afio may be done. Baking. I'll give you one more. Otso or
extraction?
No. Who's in extraction? It's taking out, carrying out. Carrying out into the Shusarabi. Carrying out from my house into the public thoroughfare. Or carrying from the public thoroughfare into my house. I go to the abattoirs. What do they call it in the California? Slaughterhouse. They don't know the word here. No.
Do
you know the word abattoir?
Yes, I think everyone does.
No, I don't.
Mark, you ever heard of the word abattoir? Never.
Abattoir.
Never heard. Never heard of the word abattoir?
Yeah.
Where? Brazil?
Venezuela.
Venezuela, they use it. They don't use it in California. It's a slaughterhouse. We call it. It's a
euphemism.
Yes, you know, it's a slaughterhouse. And because you don't know the word. Now, they don't use it in California. It's not important. So, if a person goes and he does his slaughtering on the slaughterhouse, and now he brings his meat, he takes it. First of all, he takes his knife to the slaughterhouse, he slaughters it, so he can carry. He's carrying. So he's caring for the purpose of food. Shechita may be done for cooking, may be done, baking may be done on Yom Tov. Caring also may be done on Yom Tov. So we know now that anything in connection with food may be done on Yom Tov. But we want to know something else. What is the basis of the Bio being allowed on Yom Tov with the inference that it's not permitted on Shabbos? So the Gemara says, Mitoch sheh hutro letzorech ochel nefesh, hutroch nami shelo letzorech ochel nefesh. Since it is permitted to do these things for purposes of food, it is also permitted to do it even if it's not for purposes of food. So, for example, what it means, now this is the whole sugya. The root of the sugya, the origin of this sugya is not in this Gemara, the origin of this sugya is in Beit Zohar. Very pardon?
What is it? That's wrong.
It's a duck, it's from duck you pays, most of it is a duck you pays.
It's my romantic show.
What?
The Mishnah and Duff as well.
Very pardon?
The Mishnah and Duff as
well. Yes, there's a lot of it there. So, now comes a very interesting thing. Am I allowed to carry my mazel to shul on Yom Tov?
Yeah.
But it's not
Talos.
It's not Ochel Nefesh.
That's right. But carrying is allowed.
But why? The only reason I'm only, according to this verse in the Torah formula, no manner of work shall be done, excepting that which is to be eaten or by everybody, that alone may be done for you. So what it means, obvious, is it work in connection with Ochel Nefesh, with eating, that alone may be done. Carrying my talis to shul is not Ochel Nefesh. It's not for purposes of food. Is it, David? Carrying my key to shul. I've got to open the shul. Am I allowed to carry the key? It's not Ochel Nefesh. And even if one is permitted to do shechita on Shabbos, but why is one permitted to do shechita on Shabbos, Larry?
On Shabbos?
On Yom Tov. Ochel Nefesh, it's food. But Bior is Bior food. So why should the Bior be permitted? So we say, Mitoche hutro letorech Ochel Nefesh. The principle is, since it is permitted for Torech Ochel Nefesh, Hutro, Namila, from where do we get it? Where do we get a law like this? This is the basis of it. That is what we've got to try and understand.
You do it for your bar mitzvah, so you don't have to worry about it. You know it.
I don't. It's better. I didn't say I know it.
Isn't there another part of the Chumash refers to the Shabbat as, you know, that Kol Melacha is not permitted. But when it refers to the Yom Tov, it refers to Melechet Avodah, which is quite a different.
In a different section.
This is
your source. Ach, the operative words, Ach asher ge'ochel lo chol nefesh, hu levadil ge'ochel lochem. The second part is actually the third part of the sentence. That part, Ach, starting with Ach, that part of the sentence is the operative part of the sentence.
Where is this taken from?
From Chumash.
Where?
Both. Sidra both. You base.
Okay.
You base. You follow?
Yeah.
So we've got to discuss. Got it. So what the Gemara is saying, it says, Mitoch shehutra letzorech ochel nefesh. Since chabur, or making a wound, is permitted for ochel nefesh, hutra nami shelo letzorech ochel nefesh. It's permitted also for, even if it's not a wound. Therefore, the first beer can be on Shabbos. On Yom Tov, I'm sorry. Therefore, the first beer can be on Shabbos, because it's permitted to make a wound. But the source says it's only permitted to make a wound as far as Ochel Nefesh is concerned. How does the Gemara take it that it's permitted for this also? I'm putting it to you on that basis. Because unless I put it to you on that basis, you won't understand what it's all about. You'll miss the main point of it. You'll never get down to the... You follow what I'm saying, Saul? Don't you know what I'm saying, Saul? Let's go on.
What's smoking from underneath, Forrest Brigham?
You know, Saul, I'm going to answer your question.
I know what she meant.
I'm going to answer your question, but I want you to know, once we are going to start with this thing, then I know what's going to happen. One person came to ask, can you change babies' napkins on Shabbos? Can you ride a bicycle on Yom Tov? Can you go swimming on Yom Tov? Can you wheel a pram on Yom Tov? Can you carry a baby on Yom Tov? It'll be never ending if you're going to ask me. I'm working on principles. And so you take the principle and you apply it. But I'm going to answer your question, because you asked your question before I had an opportunity to demonstrate my point and make my statement. The thing is, you're quite right that this is a very weak point. And there is a Madonna Yom Tov on it in Beit. So you know what Madonna Yom Tov is? He wrote a Perush on the Rosh. And the Madonna Yom Tov is none other than the Tosfos Yom Tov. The Tosfos Yom Tov is a very important person. Are we pardon? That's right. And the Tosfos Yom Tov was a Talmid. You know whose Talmid he was? The Maralmi Prat. He was a Talmid of the Maralmi Prat. And he's a very, very useful person to know. First of all, he's an awfully fine person, and it's a pleasure to discuss matters with him, because he's so very clear, very, very clear. And he's the Talmid of the Maral, so we get a lot of insight into the Maral from the Tosfos Yom Tov. Now, he belongs to first half of the 17th century. So it's a long time ago, it's over 300 years ago. Over 300 years ago. The Madonna Yom Tov discusses this matter. So really, 300 years, the Madonna Yom Tov says that it's put into the same category as eating. Put it in the same category as eating. But he isn't happy about it. He's not happy about it. He said that after all, he said it's not really food, but it's put into that category. If I remember correctly, he even speaks of Mighty Yuhom. Might even speak about it. He discusses it as necessary. Anyway, he says it's been done for so long already that it's accepted. But that doesn't mean you could say you can't light the match, and you can't put out the match, and you can't put out the pipe, and you can't put out the cigarette. That you're not allowed to do in Yom Tov. But this is the principle of Tzelech El Chonevish. This is what we've got to understand.
Yeah, I would say that recently, the Rabbi Yitzchak Yedidya Frankel of Tel Aviv was asked about smoking imported cigarettes on Pesach.
Yes.
And his answer was, who told you you're allowed to smoke at all? Because he says, if what we know today about defective smoking had been known to the Achronim and to the Rishonim and all the way back to Chazal,
yes,
certainly the body that God gave into our hands to take care of and to use for His purposes, He would not have allowed us to introduce these toxic matter into our body.
Yeah, probably. Of course, you know, when Churchill came to North Africa, and he was known to be on occasions rather irritated by his generals, American generals accepted, of course, but his own generals, and he came to North Africa, and there was Montgomery waging a campaign, you know. Montgomery said to want to smoke now? Montgomery doesn't smoke. Drink? Montgomery doesn't drink. Montgomery gets up every morning. It's 5 o'clock. He's up every morning. Goes to bed early every morning. And Churchy was older than Montgomery. So anyway, in the mess afterwards, they're not praising Montgomery, so looks after himself so well. Churchy became very irritated by this. And he said, I smoke and I never stop smoking. I only go to bed at 2 o'clock and 3 o'clock in the morning. I never get up before 10 o'clock. I'm still alive. I'm still alive. And I drink. I'm still alive. Oh, pardon? Montgomery lived to be a very good old age, but so did Churchill. Go on, doesn't it? Please, gentlemen. Please, gentlemen. Let us go on. So, Rav, Papi says to Rav Popo, my dad, take me tilk shel hutro chaburo letzoroch. Hutro nami shelo letzoroch. Since a chaburo is permitted the tzorich ochel nefesh, it's permitted also shelo the tzorich ochel nefesh. Therefore, it is permitted to make the first beer on Yom Tov. That's your reasoning. Elo me ato muter lases mugme be Yom Tov. Demitel shehutro avora letzorich hutro nami shelo letzorich. He said in that case it should be muter to do mugmer on Shabbos, on Yom Tov. Now, mugmer means burning spices, putting spices on the fire, and this refreshes the room. Not only does it refresh the room, but in those days they used earthenware crockery, earthenware potware, for their pots in the kitchen. And earthenware absorbs meat, absorbs fat, and it leaves a smell. And what they did, they used to do mugmar, and they used to put the pot over it, so by the time the pot food came into the pot, it was already smelling nice. They took clothing and put it over the mugmar, and so it smelled nice. Now, one is allowed to do cooking on Yom Tov. So, he says to him, Rav Papi, he says to Rav Pop, according to your reasoning, since you can do mugmar, since you can cook on Yom Tov, therefore you should be allowed to do mugmar on Yom Tov. And he says, Dimitav shutra vora letzerech hutanami shalei letzerech. Because you are allowed to use the fire for cooking, you should be able to use the fire also for mugmar. Omar Leisa, Rav Papa answered Rav Papi, Alecho Omar Kro, it is for the like of you that the Torah says, Ach Asher Ye Ochei Lechol Nefesh, only that which may be eaten Lechol Nefesh, by everyone. Dovar Ashove Lechol Nefesh, only something that is common to all human beings. Or to all Jews. Mugmar. Who can go in for mugmar?
Rich people.
Rich people. And the funak. A fastidious person. These are the people that go in. But everybody, ordinary people, don't go in for that. For. So it's not a... It's not a dobor that is... Lechol nefesh.
There's some democracy in the halacha.
It's not lechol nefesh. Now he doesn't say to him, Rav Papi doesn't say to Rav Popo, he doesn't say to him, but it's not ochel nefesh. That isn't the problem. We don't say hutro letzorech ochel nefesh, hutro nami shelo letzorech ochel nefesh. Since it is permitted to use the fire for ochel nefesh, it is permitted to use the fire even if it's not for ochel nefesh.
Why is that? How can you understand from what the
Lord is saying? That's the... $60,000 question. That is the great question. I'm stressing that because I want you to be worried about it. And it's only when you are really worried about it that you'll be able to understand what happens. You'll be able to understand the Tosfos. If you're not worried about it, you won't be able to understand the Tosfos. You read it and you translate it and you don't know what, you won't be able to understand it. You think you understand it, which is even worse than not understanding it. Because if you don't understand it, one day you will understand it. But if you think you understand it, you never understand it. You don't know that you don't understand. So that is the point I want you to... It's a very simple thing. That is the point I want you to know. You're absolutely right, Selma. That is the big... It is permitted to use fire on Shabbos for cooking, then it should be used for mukmar punitive. This I've never heard of, that it can be used for that. So he says to him, Rapopo answered to him, you're quite right. He says, there the fault is not the whole nefesh. You get it better from the next piece of the Gemara.
What word?
Mark?
I'm sorry. Etzer says Beyonto, Dimitol, Shehutra, and then
Havolo. Fire.
Oh, fire.
I'm translating it because the use of fire is permitted. The use of fire is permitted. You follow?
Mm-hmm.
The use of. Omale Rav Acha b'rei de Rova le Rav Ashi. Said Rav Acha, the son of Rova to Rav Ashi, Elo me ato, but now. Nizdamin lo tzvi beyomto. He meets a deer on yomto.
Yes.
Do you know what that is?
B-E-E-R,
not a V-E-A-R. V-E-A-R is your wife. A V-E-E-R is an animal. Yes. He meets a deer on yomtev. He meets a deer on yomtev. How you be a neshova nechol nevish hochi nami de chosen a mishchete? So he said, according to
the meat.
Venison is here. Who has venison? He says, because, he says, who is venison? So will you say then that he can't have, he's not allowed to shecht, he can only shecht a goat, and he can only shecht a sheep, and he can only shecht an ox, but he's not allowed to shecht a deer, because that's not a, not everybody has deer. Omale answered Rav Ashi, answered him. Ano dovara tzorech lechol nefesh ko amino. Tzvi tzorech lechol nefesh. He said, what I meant was, I don't mean that not everybody can afford to eat it. What I meant is, it's edible by all people. It's something that's edible by all. All people will eat it. That is what I meant. And a tzvi is something that all people eat. Now,
that would reflect back in the mukmar that everybody.
Well, yes, not quite.
Because the mukmar, if you could have, anybody could enjoy being, everybody would like to be able to afford to do mukmar, right? To put spices on its coals, on the fire. What have you? And you say that he made the argument in the name of democracy that there's certain sort of basic needs that we all share. Mukmar isn't one of them.
Well, it's not quite like that. You just take it a little bit. Just you've just got to reduce it a little bit there. What he's saying is, tzvi is food. And food is everybody.
Okay, it's universal.
Okay. You see, mugmar, that's not for everybody. It's not food.
Okay.
That is what he
okay.
says.
Okay.
That is really what it means. Got the idea?
Okay, I got it.
Okay. Now, the whole message. See to the whole nafshu. Omar Rabbi, yes. Now, that is the whole sugya within the sugya. That is the whole sugya within the sugya.
Really?
Yes, that's all it is.
There's no conclusion, really.
On this,
yeah.
We came to the conclusion just now. But
yeah.
This is the question of Bitok Shehutra Letzora Hutra Namishaloda Tzorech. That is the sugya that I'm going to do with. But what I want to do is I want to finish the overall sugya first, which will take me another few minutes. So let us finish the overall sugya first, and then we'll come to grips with the Gemara. I'm not coming to grips with the Gemara. All I'm doing now is translating the Gemara. That's all I'm doing, really. And trying to create difficulties for you. And if you accept the difficulties, that means you understand it. And if you reject the difficulties, it means you don't understand it. That's all it is. Right. Omar Rabbi Yaakov, gentlemen, Omar Rabbi Yaakov bar Idi, said Rabbi Yaakov the son of Idi, Hore Rabbi Yochanan b'Tzidon. Rabbi Yochanan gave a decision, a ruling in Tzidon, also liver b'dechila b'Shabbos. It's not permitted to do the first be on Shabbos. Ask the Gemara umikiko role isur. I don't understand, says the Gemara. He gave a decision that it's prohibited to do the first beer in Shabbos. For that you need a decision. A decision is to permit something that normally you would think is not permitted. But you don't have to give a decision to say you're not permitted. You don't need a decision for it. You understand the question? David, you don't understand. David, you asked me a question. Am I going to have something to eat tonight? I said, just give me a quarter of an hour, please. A quarter of an hour with my children, a quarter of an hour, of course. Yes, David, I'm going to have something to eat. What is your question going to be to me?
Why did you take the wrong
course? Did you have to take a quarter of an hour to work out? You don't have to take a quarter of an hour for that. You need a decision for that. For that, you need a decision. They need a decision for that. He said, he permitted Rabbi Yochanan in Sidon ruled, also live over the Chilo B'Shabbos. It's not permitted to do the first day on Shabbos. To not permit, you need a ruling for it. Say it's not permitted. But Hora means that he went deeply into the matter and he decided that he don't need a decision for that. Ask the Gemara, we get a rolling. Ask the Gemara, yes. One uses that expression. The whole Tanan didn't we learn.
He would need to make a whole sense to make a decision. We've been going over it for months. Yes. I understand he's at a high level.
But to say no, you don't need an exhibition to say no. To say yes, you could have a party. Look what the man went through. Came to a great decision. But to say no. If I don't know, I say no.
Can we say that it was once permitted?
I beg your pardon? No.
The question is then that, in other words, since Rabbi Yochanan wasn't going against any precedents here, why did he need the decision?
If you say no, you don't need an exhibition, you don't need a concert, you don't need a banquet for that. You say no. Mm-hmm. If you don't know, you say no. So what's the big fuss about it? Oh, says the Gemara, what's none, but we learned in the Mishnah, how Ruah Beis Hillel Shetahein Zero Old Sheva Choni Macheres. Hillel ruled that she has to be a Nazaritess, if there is such a word in the English language, for another 7 years.
Who has to be?
Okay. Yeah, I'm going to tell you the story.
as long as he has.
I thought you'd let me get away with it.
No.
All right, you can sit back. You can sit back a little. In the first half of the first century, in a country, you know, in those days they used to have very small countries. Were very small. In America, you've got states that are whole countries. You know, but in those days, you had countries like Liechtenstein. If anybody ever, has anybody ever walked through Liechtenstein? Yeah. Well, you know.
What? One afternoon, yes. One afternoon.
Yes. Take a walk through Liechtenstein. It's a country. Have you ever been to Luxembourg?
Yep.
Well, one of this a little bit bigger. You know, I mean, how big is Luxembourg altogether? It's a small place, you see. Evidently, in the times of the Gomorrah, there were lots of small countries like that. So there was a country, and the king was Monabites. And it was in, it must have been somewhere between Babylon and Assyria. Today it would probably be somewhere between Iraq and Syria. Somewhere around there it was. It's a small state, a small country. The king was Monabal, and the queen was Helena. And this king was a very outstanding person, a very great Bartstoko, and he got in touch, he used to be in touch with travelers who used to come from Eretz Israel, and he became a Jew. And his wife became a Jew, Helena. And then he died, she was left a widow, but she had a son. And her son became the king in his place. His name was also Monabaz. And there was a great drought there, and he took all the treasures that they had and just opened them up for the poor people to see that the poor people were fed. They were very outstanding people, both he and his queen. And the queen, Helena, made a neder. There was a war, and her son was going out to war. And she made a neder that should he come back from the war, not be killed in war, she would be a Nazirah for 7 years. A Nazirite is for a Nazarene, she would be for 7 years. Right? Now, this was outside of Eretz Israel. And this was in the first half of the first century. That means that the Beis HaMikdash was still in existence. You know what the Beis HaMikdash is?
Yeah.
That means the Beis HaMikdash was still in existence. The law in the Torah is, when a Nozir is finished his time of Nazirus, he's got to bring a Korban. But if you are living in Chutz La'aretz, what are you going to do for a Korban? If you are going to bring a Korban, the Chutz La'aretz bring a Korban, but your Nazirus wasn't in Eretz Yisrael. You didn't practice in Eretz Yisrael. So you don't bring a korban. You see, alright, so you don't. So then she went up to Eretz Yisrael. The 7 years went up and she goes to Eretz Yisrael. She transferred herself, she emigrated to live in Eretz Yisrael. And she wanted a psak. What is she going to do with being a Nazirite? So Hillel Paskin, another 7 years you've got to keep.
Start all over again. Start the counting all over again.
Got to keep. So she was altogether, she was for 14 years. One day in the Gemara in the Dorim, one says it was 21 years, but anyway, was altogether it was 14 years. We take the letter this down. Altogether it was 14 years. Now, all it brings this piece of Gemara is, Behotnan, didn't we learn in the Mishnah? Ho Ruah Beis Hillel. Beis Hillel ruled Shetahei Mizira Od Sheva Chonim Acheros. The question was, does she have to be a Nazira for another 7 years or not? It says he ruled she's got to be for another 7 years. So the Gemara says, for ruling for another 7 years, you need a ruling for it. To make a statement, he says you've got to have another 7 years. A ruling implies there was a lot of thought that went into it. Says the Gemara, but we see it's used. The Inami Oki Hodesanyo, we learned another deen. Chuta Shedro, Shenifsak Berubo, Divrei Rabbi, Divrei Rebbe. The Shedro is the backbone. And it's speaking about an animal. And the backbone is made up of Julios. What do you call Julios?
Vertebrae
is the word, yes. It's made up of vertebrae. Through those vertebrae goes
spinal cord.
The spinal cord is called the chut ha-shedra. The chut, the thread of the shedra. The shedra is the spine, and the chut ha-shedra is the spinal cord. Now, altogether, when one slaughters an animal, the animal must be a kosher animal after it's slaughtered. In other words, there must be nothing trace about it. If, for example, the animal has got a hole in the heart, that animal is trace. Or if the animal has got a perforation in the intestines, that animal is trace. Altogether, there are 18 forms of trefa. 18 forms. The deen is that we don't have to examine an animal for these 18 forms of trefa. Because the majority of animals haven't got holes in their heart. And the majority of animals haven't got perforations in the intestines. The only part of the anatomy of the animal that we examine, and we examine that with the utmost care, is the lung. We examine the lung. Why do we examine the lung? Because the majority of bovines and sheep have something wrong with the lungs. They have...
The majority has something wrong, or the majority of the ones that have something wrong, it's in the lungs. Yes.
The majority of the majority. It's very, very seldom that you will open up an ox and find that the lung is absolutely clear. There's usually some kind of lesion.
You're saying that there's a very low yield when you slaughter?
Well, first of all, I must tell you that there is a very low yield. And when I come to a town and they do shechita there, one of the first questions I ask the sheikh, I said, what is your yield? And if he tells me, as one sheikh has probably said, 98%. And I know already.
You're a vegetarian in that town.
I know already. I know already. It's too tough. You see? Then I know already. All I can tell you is that in Johannesburg, if it was 50%, they were very happy. They got 50 today clear.
That's my question.
50. Usually it was less than 50. It was between 40, 45, that's usual.
Wow.
So the percentage is very, very low, yes?
What's the difference between lot and just kosher?
Well, you know, I'm sorry you got me on this. No, you don't sit back. This you can't sit back. You dare not sit back. I'm very sorry you got me on this question, Phil.
It has something to do with the lesions in the lung.
That's right. The only trouble is that they are using this word blood. They are really for chickens, they call them blood chickens.
Yeah,
they blood milk. You can get blood kosher blood milk, you see. And soon you'll be able to get blood sugar and blood kosher milk and blood kosher tea and blood kosher water. You know, the whole thing is...
We're on our way to blood kosher.
Just the whole thing is getting out of hand. But even the blood kosher animal, strictly speaking, should be an animal where there's no lesions. Strictly speaking, that is what it should be. But there are lesions and there are lesions. There are big lesions and there are little lesions and there are tiny lesions. And where it's a tiny lesion and it's a very fresh lesion and it's a very new lesion, very often you can take it away from the walls of the chest, the ribs, you can take it away, and if you blow up the lung, it'll be fine, it'll hold the air. You follow? So, I think I'm practically certain, when it's blood kosher, they allow a certain number of lesions, you see. They allow a certain number. These little, the very tiny ones and fresh ones that you can sort of take off, they allow. But I want to tell you, and I tell you these things in a shear, because I'm trying to broaden your horizons, your total horizons, and I want you to know something about it. You have to practice, just like me.
I'm hearing what you're saying really well.
You see, you know it. how I like it to be heard.
Be out of practice because my head is on my head.
No, I can see. Oh, but it's nothing to be ashamed of because I'm always out of practice. But I'm
honored to be out of practice.
Yeah, well, right. You wouldn't be more honored than any other second. Hearing you can hear. But the thing is, what happens after it goes into the ears? Does it go into the brain? And if it goes into the brain, what happens after it goes into the brain? From the brain, does it go to the mind or does it only stick in the brain? And if it goes through the mind, does it stick in the mind or does it go into the intellect? If it goes into the intellect, we're already beginning to get somewhere. And from the intellect, I wanted to go further. I wanted to go through the whole of the spiritual circulatory system until it makes its ways through the finest of fine tubes or capillaries into the innermost recesses of the soul. And once it's there, it's never lost. Never lost. That is what we're told is expected to go. Never lost once it gets as far as that. But if we're out of practice, we can't expect miracles. So if it goes as far as the intellect, all that, for tonight it'll be alright. But next, I'm even prepared for tonight, the brain. But next week it's already got to go into the intellect. The intellect, right? The intellect is enough for next week, right? So you get as far as that. So I'm telling you this because I want to broaden your horizons a little bit. The vehicle, the examination of the lung, is a very exacting procedure. The shochet puts in his hands inside, it's open, put it inside. And very often the bodek is not the shochet. In fact, we prefer it if the bodek is not the shochet. And where there's a big shita, you can afford it, you see. He puts in his hands and he's got to be careful and he comes across a lesion so he knows where it is, something wrong here. And then he puts his hand onto the other side and he feels it. First of all, you've got to be an expert to know where it is. But if the man is a very great expert, and if he's not an honest man, he can do something there. As he puts his hand round and he comes to a lesion, he can undo that lesion. He can undo it. And when I put in my hands afterwards, I'll never be able to. What does he benefit by it? He saves time. He gets home earlier. If he's got a lesion in there, that ox has got to go for treif, and another ox has got to be taken, and sometimes you've got to wait, and like this it goes. If he's not honest, he can do that, and get away with it. So it has to be a very honest man. And that is the what's called the bdikas pnim, that he's examining it inside. And after you examine inside, then you take out the lung, and then comes the bleakers puts you, examine it outside, blow up the lung, see how it is, where the lesions is, see how it is, can do what you do with it. That is the way. It's a long procedure. It's a very exacting procedure. But that is as far as the lung is concerned. We don't examine any other part of the animal, excepting a colleague of mine, again, a very fine colleague of mine, Johannesburg, once came to me and he said, you know, watch out in the abattoirs or in the slaughterhouses, sheep's intestines. And I watched out and I asked him to come with me and we found that there were abscesses on the intestines of sheep. And this was a serious matter, the sheep are trained.
But you don't have to check it. In other words, there always can be some lesions anyway.
Yes, but if you've got a suspicion, you've got to check. If there's a reason for it, we call that a lie in the door. If there's some reason, you've got to check. Anyway, I got in touch immediately with a very good farmer, and I asked him about it. The sheep farmer, he said, yes, he knows about it. This time of the year, the animals have got this. So we were in difficulties. We had to stop shearing of sheep for several months due to the year that it was. In Tzfat, they examine animals, the membrane of the brain is examined. Because Tzfat is a place where they found that animals, they said it came from the water, I don't know from where it came, that animals have perforations in the membrane of the brain. So there they are, perhaps even till today they do it. It's possible they do it still to today. But that is where they do it.
Do they have to examine the lungs as well, or just the
brain? Oh, then the lungs you've got to examine. Lungs you've got to examine. That seems to have been always, this seems to have been a big... Now, another one is the chut ha-shedra. So here we've got the chut ha-shedra is as follows, the spinal cord. She nifsach berubo divrei Rebbe. Rebbe says that it's a trefa only if it has snapped, the major part of that cord is set. In an animal, let us say it is as thick as this. The spinal cord is as thick as this. If it has snapped and the majority of it is set, then the animal is trapped. But if it is less, or if it is in the length, it is something, it's kosher, says Rebbe. The other authority says, Rabbi Yaakov Omer Afilu Nikev, even if it is just a small hole, it's already trafe. Hora Rebbe Rabbi Yaakov, and Rebbe gave a decision, gave a ruling like Rabbi Yaakov. So we see that the word giving a decision is used even if it is for it is negative. Not only if it's positive, the word is used for negative. Therefore, it's quite right for Rabbi Yochanan to have used the word ruling when he said it's not permitted to do the first beyond Shabbos. But, what do we find? Omar Rav Huna, and Rav Huna is a very strong authority. Ein halacha k'Rabbi Rabbi Yaakov. The law is not like Rabbi Yaakov, and the Rambam Paskins, and the Shulchan Aruch Paskins, that if the spinal cord is severed, but the majority of it is not severed, the animal is kosher. That is the psak. Omar, look at it. Rav Nachman bar Yitzchok Masni Hochi. Rav Nachman bar, now, that was just to say that to justify the word of Heruo, giving a ruling for a negative decision. That's all. Now we come back to our subject and we reach the final stage. Rav Nachman bar Yitzchok Masni Hochi. Rav Nachman bar Yitzchok taught as follows. Rav Nachman bar Yitzchok Masni. Rav Nachman bar Yitzchok taught. Hochi Omar Rabbi Abua. So said Rabbi Abua. Shor Rabbi Yishmoel ben Yaakov de Minzur is Rabbi Yochanan de Tzidon. Rabbi Shmuel, the son of Yaakov of Tzur, asked Rabbi Yochanan in Sidon, Va'ano Shemia, and says Rabbi Abu, and I heard him asking him, Mahu libo b'dechivu lebe Shabbos, what is the deen with regard to making the first be on Shabbos? The Omar lay osu, and he said to me that it is osu.
Said to him.
To him, I'm sorry, thank you. And Rabbi Yochanan said to Rabbi Shmuel ben Yaakov that it's also the hilchaso, but the law is muter libel b'dechila b'Shabbos. It is permitted to make the first beer on Shabbos.
Mm-hmm.
There we've got the end of the sermon. From where is it permitted to make the first? You could see already from here. Bebi Rav Amri Rav Shori Ushmuel also Benedoi Amri Rav also Ushmuel Shori. From here, the whole Hiluch HaSugi has been, the whole tendency of the Sugi has been that the first Bio is Mutter on Shabbos.
What we're just saying here is that Rabbi Yochanan got voted down on this issue.
Rabbi, yes, that's all. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's it. But our Psak Halacha is that it's permitted. And that is the way we pass.
Was there a crux, a central point where all the reasonings on both sides were balanced up, and this is why we find
That is in Psaf. That you will find in Psaf. That belongs to Pesach. If you take, in the Rambam you won't find it, and in the Shulchan Aruch you won't find it, and in the Tur you won't find it, but in the Beis Yosef, on the Tur, there you will find it. Then he goes through the reasons.
Are we
expected
to find it in the Gemara?
No. Well, yeah, you've got it. All those reasons are taken from the Gemara.
I hear all
right,
the reasons.
But there, yes. There you see, don't forget, hadn't we had three other conditions being fulfilled, had we done this without any interruptions, had we been learning every day, had we finished this whole sugya, which goes into four pages, and some of it was quite difficult stuff, had we been able to have done it with the Tosfos also, which we weren't ready for. I'm only going to start Tosfos with you now on the sugya of Mitzvot Utrud Tzelus, Utrud Nami Shalom Tzelus. I'm only starting it now. Had we been able to do that, it would have been easier for me just to take the different points. But you remember some of the points? Does he want it for the Pesach, or does he want it for the for his Anuos Atzmo? It's Makalkel, it's a Dovashem Miskavim, it's a Makalkel. The other subject that it comes up in the Tosfos, that it's a Misasei. And all that, you see, there are lots of considerations. All these considerations point over and over again that it's Mutar Dibur B'Nechila B'Shabbos. From the Gemara, it is evident that it's Mutar Dibur B'Nechila B'Shabbos. Well, that is the end of the story.
Was it then always known? Was it always allowed for me to have the first day on Shabbos?
That is very difficult for me to answer, but from that Rambam it will still come clearer. It will still come clearer. What was
where they first came from? That's
yes.
A very difficult
right.
And that's the thing.
Yes.
Isn't there somehow I've been thinking that because of the particular role that the last generation, Rav Ashi and his colleagues, that they were the ones who put this? Did they have sort of a weight disproportionate weight in making in putting their imprint on the halakha because of coming having the last
very,
word?
It's not.
I just wonder if this is Rav Ashi who wrote that last.
No, it's real. It was, of course, it was. But it's very no. But he would never have done it hadn't it the whole sugya been coming out of that result. Then he does it. But very often, more often than not, that the Gemara doesn't reach a conclusion.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't mean to say that we mustn't reach a conclusion. Mm-hmm. If we go through the Gemara properly, we can reach a conclusion. The only thing is we don't rely on ourselves. We go to the Rambam for that.
Mm-hmm.
And we go to the Shulchan Aruch for that. That is what Pesach is. Pesach has taken
this
all
is what
that.
The late Rabbi Maimon was claiming at one time that now in these times, because of the wake of the Holocaust, at the time he was making a case for reconvening the Sanhedrin, and he didn't succeed, but he was
it wasn't a very good case.
He was one of the great scholars of our generation.
Yeah, but it wasn't a very good case.
He didn't succeed. Rav Kook before him also didn't succeed.
He didn't. Rav Kook never wanted that.
He didn't want to send Sanhedrin, but he took a lot of steps on his own. Rav Kook
that
has since become president.
Rav Kook did nothing. Unfortunately, Rav Kook had an official position which made that his decisions were not binding. So you've got a lot of people in Israel that don't take it. You know, he gave a decision with cheese, which wasn't accepted. Just felt that he was.
He was such a. I understand him to have been a man of very high quality.
And certainly,
how
impeccable
could he
and
why did he take this position?
Well,
he had to know that.
I must tell you that at that time when he took this position, the rabbis of Eastern Europe, of whom he was part, asked him not to take it.
he wrote his, in his work, you know, he has his, he gives his reasons
why
he took it, and he felt that this mitzvah being Eretz Yisrael is something that he wanted to be involved in. His contribution cannot be.
And the great Craig Kay, 1925, when they opened the Hebrew University, and he was asked to be present, and he couldn't refuse. You might ask, what's the general thing if he goes to the opening of the Hebrew University? One of the subjects with which they started was Bible and biblical criticism. And he's there.
Right. Yet,
He was very quiet. But this was considered to be a very great criticism.
You say that men like Rabbi Asaf of Rabbi Shalom, who taught Talmud at the Hebrew University for a generation, he was certainly not considered an inferior scholar by your...
But he wasn't a person who gave world decisions.
No, I would say that he delved more into the depth of
but
the
he wasn't a person who gave decisions, you see. He wasn't a Kofetz Chaim.
Mm-hmm.
And he wasn't a Chazon Ish. And he wasn't a Rebbe Soloveitchik. He didn't give decisions, fine. You get very great Rosh Hashivas today that when it comes to something, they say, okay, this is not my line. I said, I don't do that. I deal with Aloha, not with Psak. We get great Rosh Hashivas today. The point of Yisro was in my home once and I had a difficult Shaila. And I said, okay, I've got the point of Yisro here, let him pass. And I'm not going to pass him in the presence of the point of Yisro. And he said, I'm out of it. He said, I haven't been a Rav for so many years. He said, I've lost the feel of it.
With this, I've heard the statement that the Roshei Yeshiva are really out of the community in the sense that they're not in the day-to-day living.
It's not his line, you see.
He's been doing theory rather than
practice.
Right.
That's why he doesn't do it. So he didn't want to do it. So I said, well, at least we can discuss it. He said, discuss it, yes. He said, discuss it, yes.
But he wasn't going to let you off the hook with respect to your responsibility to your community.
Yes, well, that's all I needed. And we had all this for him, and he came, and we discussed, and I heard him. And listen, he showed me that. He said, you know, this isn't, you can't take it this way, you can't take it. And that's all I needed, you see. Fine.
So you went out and made a decision that he influenced, obviously.
Yes, of course. Yeah. So that's the way it fits. All right, now we've just covered the ground. Next week in Hirtza Hashem, our subject is Mitoch Shehutro LeTzorach Hutro Shelo LeTzorach. What does all this mean?
Could you suggest some reading on that from Rishonim for me? The best thing
is if you do the Gemara in Beitzo. I think it's Yubayz in Beitzo. That's there you find Tesvov. You find it again there. You can do a look up some of the Gemaras there. But that's the thing is, we've got to get the basis. The basis is, you see, where do you get the basis from? That is really what we've got to do. So, Yosef, what am I saying?
Yes.
Right. You know, this is one of those things that you can go and you can learn it, and the basic thing you can miss. And the basic thing is this. We say, since it is permitted to do it for Ochel Nefesh, it is permitted to do it even not for Ochel Nefesh. It's a very dangerous thing.
Absolutely.
God, they say, how far do you go?
And what is the basis for it?
And what is the basis? In the Pasuk it isn't said, there you get it from. So where do you get this from? And that is what we've got to discuss. We've got to find Raj here. I don't want to just tell you. I want me that together we've got to work this out and see what it's all about. But it's a most fascinating sugya. And this is the first time I'm taking you through into the Tosfos. Until now I've never touched the Tosfos with you, really. This is the first time I'm taking you into the Tosfos. Now you're ready for it already. Ready to do the Tosfos.
Plenty of opportunity with that to you can mess up the whole of Shabbos law.
You can mess up the whole of Yom Tov with it.
You can mess up any, but you can say Pikuach Nefesh.
You can induce from A to Z.
Will somebody doesn't mind it, please?